Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. The time is 1:33 p.m. We're in Belts, room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful, snowy out there. It's the most beautiful snowy capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Monday, March 2nd, 2026. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Yunt, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Senator Dunbar is online. Congratulations on your son, Senator Dunbar, who was born just recently. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome, everyone, to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please turn off or silence your cell phones and join me in welcoming our recording secretary, Carrie Tupo, and our LAO moderator, Susan Quigley. We have four items on our agenda today. First, Senate Bill 164, eliminate tax discounts. Second, Senate Bill 233, Controlled Substances Advisory Committee. Third will be House Bill 50, Snow Classics. And fourth, Senate Bill 249, Virtual Currency Kiosks. First up is Senate Bill 164. This is our second hearing on the bill. Today, it is my intention to hear a recap of the bill, take public testimony, adopt conceptual amendment number one, and look to the will of the committee. With us today for a brief recap of the bill is the Honorable Senator Kelly Merrick and her trusty staff, Sorcia Hazleton. Ladies, please put yourselves on the record and begin your brief recap of the bill.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Bjorkman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kelly Merrick, District L, and I represent Chugiak Eagle River in the State Senate. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 164 again. As a brief recap, Senate Bill 164 was inspired by the Indirect Expenditure Report with recommendations from the Nonpartisan Legislative Finance Division. This bill eliminates four things: the motor fuel tax timely filing credit, the tobacco products tax timely filing deduction, the cigarette stamp tax discount, and the tire fee timely filing discount. The Department of Revenue estimates SB 164 could raise nearly $500,000 a year for the state, and this is revenue that could be put toward capital projects, public safety, and more. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Senator Merrick. Are there any questions from committee members? Any committee discussion before we open public testimony? At this time, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 164. Public testimony is open. Is there anyone online or in the room who would like to testify to this item? Seeing and hearing no one, at this time I will close public testimony. Are there any further questions, comments, or notations for the bill sponsor? Hearing and seeing none, we need to adjust the effective date of this bill. Senator Gray Jackson, may I have a motion, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to conceptual amendment number one to change the effective date in Section 6 to July 1st, 2026. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection? Amendment's rather self-explanatory. Hearing and seeing no objection, conceptual amendment number one is adopted. What are the wishes of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move to report Senate Bill 164, version 34-Lima Sierra 0763/N Nilnichik as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. I further move that we grant legislative legal authority to make technical and confirmation changes to the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing no objection, Senate Bill 164, version 34-LS0763/N as in Napaskiak is amended and reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note, and legislative legal is granted authority to make technical and conforming changes when drafting the final committee substitute of the bill. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for our next item. On the record, the time is now 1:39 p.m. here in Belch Room 105. Next up is Senate Bill 233. Today it is my intention to hear a brief recap of the bill, take public testimony, and look to the will of the committee on this item as well. This is our second hearing on the bill. With us for that brief recap, we have the Honorable Senator Matt Clayman and his staff, Ms. Carly Dennis. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourselves on the record and begin your recap of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Matt Clayman. I represent Senate District H in West Anchorage, and thank you for again hearing Senate Bill 233. Senate Bill 233 places the Controlled Substance Advisory Commission, or the CSAC, under the Department of Community, Commerce, and Economic Development. The committee is currently administered by the Department of Law, which is unable to prioritize it. While the Department of Law serves on many boards and commissions, the CSAC is the only committee that the Criminal Division manages, and managing that committee is really not in their daily work process. The committee itself offers an important public safety service and should be assigned to a department that is better equipped to effectively staff it. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Clayman. Senator Gray Jackson, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question last week and pertaining to the fiscal note, and my question was, was there funding in the budget already when it was in the department, the other department? And they came back and said that they have no record of receiving funding associated with this work, so I guess they just use funds within the department. So I'm wondering if it's being transferred to labor, to what department is it being transferred to? I'm sorry.
Department of Commerce, Community, Economic Development,
right. Okay.
DCCED.
Right. So I'm wondering if, instead of having a fiscal note, the department can do the same thing that the Department of Law did and use funds within the department. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Then it'd be a zero fiscal note.
And through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, that would be a question for DCCED.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anybody here from DCCED that can answer my question, Mr. Chairman?
I know Law is here.
Yes. Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson, and thank you for folks who are in the audience that are making their presence known as well. We do have Director Hannah Lager from the Department of Commerce here, and I'm sure she can speak to that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Director Lager, thank you for joining us today. We very much appreciate that you are here on this snowy Juneau Monday. Could you please put yourself on the record and talk to us a little bit about the financial implications of this expectation moving to your department?
Absolutely. Thank you. For the record, my name is Hannah Lager. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, we included a fiscal note that included travel for the members of the commission to meet once per year. That has been our experience with other boards. We are home to many of them in the department, is that especially when a board or commission is meeting only a couple of times per year, that they like one of those to be in person to ensure that they actually get the work done during that meeting. So we did include that. We don't have additional travel funding in our department right now to use for that purpose, right? We don't have funding that could be repurposed at this point. It would be supported from our commissioner's office, which is already a pretty small section there. What I don't know is at Law, when they met previously, if they were doing it all virtually or if they were doing in-person meetings. I don't have that history. But in our fiscal note, we do assume that there would be one trip per year for each member.
Thank you, Director Lager. Senator Gray Jackson, do you want to follow up?
No, not really. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Senator Yunt.
Oh, yeah, thank you, through the chair. It's good. I'm glad it's in there. I'm glad you have that built in. But I think a different way of asking the question is, was that money already being spent in the Department of Law? And would it now be basically moving it from one department to the other, which doesn't actually cost the state of Alaska money, I think would be the better question. But if we don't have the people here to answer that today, that's fine.
Deputy Attorney General Andrew Kemp is here from Law. If you would like to talk to past practice of this commission and advisory committee at Law, that would be great.
Thanks for the question. Again, for the record, Angie Kemp, Deputy Attorney General. Through the chair, Senator Yunt, the last couple times that I'm aware of, the most recent meeting that the committee had was in December, and they met virtually. Part of the reason, I think, for the introduction of the bill is because we've not met regularly, and in large part that's been due to, as Senator Klayman pointed out, the criminal division has, I guess, been derelict in our responsibilities in making sure that, this committee meets. It's not one of those things that is traditional within the our mission. So it is unfortunately fell to the bottom of the stack relative to other priorities that are in competition. But to my knowledge, Senator Yunt, we've been able to hold those meetings when they happen virtually.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a question. I just want to make a point. This is, in my opinion, this bill is basically a housekeeping bill. And when there's a fiscal note attached to any bill, it has a harder time of making it to the finish line. And so my thought process was, because it's only $13,500, if it can be eaten up through some other source within a budget, that would make the chances of it making to the finish line sooner than later, in my opinion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Senator Ray Jackson. Are there any other questions for departments or the bill sponsor? Hearing and seeing no further questions, I would note for the record, the bill sponsor's committee is the next committee of referral, so I'm sure he can adjust his bill how he wishes once it gets there to speed it on to the finish line. So at this time, I'll open public testimony on Senate Bill 233. Is there anyone in the room or online who wishes to testify to this item? Hearing and seeing no volunteers for testimony, we will close Senate Bill 233's public testimony. That brings the bill back before the committee. Is there any further committee discussion? Seeing and hearing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move to report Senate Bill 233, version 34, Lima Sierra, 1270/A-alpha from Committee with Individual Recommendations and Attached Fiscal Note. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing no objection, Senate Bill 233, version 34-LS 1270/A as an Anchorage is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for the next bill. Bill 148 now in Senate Labor and Commerce. Next item up for hearing today is House Bill 50. With us to introduce the bill is the Honorable Representative Sarah Hannan and her staff, Hunter Meacham. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourselves on the record and begin your presentation of the bill.
Thank you. I'm Representative Sarah Hannan, House District 4, which you're sitting in on a very snowy day.
And I'm Hunter Meacham, staff to Representative Hannan.
You will see in your binder a very short bill, because House Bill 50 is a very narrow change in the charitable gaming law. It would simply broaden the definition of who could conduct a snow classic. It would change nothing about who or how charitable gaming is conducted or classics are conducted, all the same parameters that are currently in statute would continue to exist. But right now, under Snow Classics, one charitable organization in one location is specified in the statute. The bill would take that specificity out and allow other locations that meet all charitable gaming definitions and organizational nonprofit status to apply for a Snow Classic. This bill came as a piece of special interest from a constituent group of mine. The Junior Nordic Ski Club here in Juneau was seeking a way to try and generate some revenue for their nonprofit youth skiing program. And although a rain classic is eligible for a variety of communities in Alaska, a snow classic isn't. And so we are seeking to remove that specificity and allow a snow classic to be conducted. Classics are a specific kind of charitable gaming where you designate, and in the case of snow, you designate a specific time, place, and location and date that you would measure the snow. People have bought guesses as to the accuracy of the depth this year. People would be amazed if they had chosen a December date of how much snow we would have had, and earn revenue off of that. There are 15 kinds of classics specified in Alaska statute currently. There's everything from the cabbage classic to the canned salmon classic to the crane, and that's birds, not equipment. Classic, the deep freeze classic, probably the most well-known of all classics in Alaska is the Nanana Ice Classic. Most classics have nowhere the magnitude of profit the Nanana Ice Classic has garnered over the 100 years that they've been in existence. And I think with that, I'll probably stop and see if you have any questions or if you would like my staff to go through the sectional for the bill.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. I think as the bill is about
8 lines.
Yeah, I think we're good on the sectional, but we appreciate your willingness to share it with us. Are there any questions from committee members? The sponsor has invited one testifier to come and talk to us about this bill. Tristan Knutson Lombardo. Is that you, sir? Come forward, please. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. If you could please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Tristan Knutson Lombardo. I am the executive director of the Juneau Nordic Ski Club. I will just share quickly that this idea came forth. We have a parent group who helps support our youth ski programs. We get about 120 Juneau youth out on trails here each winter, plus a few hundred out of our schools. It's a growing ski program, and on days like today, we're quite busy. We're always looking for ways to generate new revenue to support our programs. It's really important for us that anyone here in town has access to skiing, so we provide our programs on a sliding scale, zero to full cost of the program. We also provide rental skis for everybody, which is, makes us a little unique because we know that those are two big barriers, cost and gear, to participate. And so our parent group said, gosh, it'd be cool if we could do a snow classic, a snow guessing contest, and to their surprise and my surprise, we found it was actually pretty well constricted who could do that. So, and now, a year and a half later, I'm here in front of you all trying to navigate this process, and we have connected with a few other groups around the state and said, gosh, you know, you're a qualifying entity. You might have interest in something like this. And we really, our organization thinks it would just be a really nice way, a fun way to celebrate winter and a new source of revenue for our programs. Thanks.
Tristan, thank you very much. Are there any questions from committee members? Hearing and seeing none. Thank you again for joining us today. On the phone for questions is the director. Oh, I'm sorry, my bad. Wrong place in the script. That concludes all of our planned activity on this item today. We will hold it over for a future hearing at a later date, but I really like the concept of the bill. It's very simple. We have done much work here in Title V with charitable gaming over the last 2 years, and we're happy to help this out as well. Any wrap-up comments, ma'am?
Thank you, and we wish we were betting on snow today.
Very good. Well, thanks again, Rep. Hannon. We'll take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. We're back on the record now. It is 1:56 p.m. here in Senate Labor and Commerce. Our final item of the day is Senate Bill 249. With us to introduce the bill, we have the bill sponsor, the Honorable Senator Kathy Tilton, and her staff, Mr. Heath Hilliard. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourselves on the record and begin your introduction of the bill.
Thank you. For the record, Senator Kathy Tilton, Senate District M, Palmer Butte, Lazy Mountain, Gateway, Kinnick, Fairview, and Settlers Bay. And with me today is my staff, Heath Hilliard.
For the record, Heath Hilliard, staff to Senator Tilton.
And thank you. First, I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill today and to committee members for hearing it as well. I think many of you heard my testimony the other day regarding an incident that had happened to my mother over the weekend when we were all watching a football game. And just to put that on the record briefly, what happened has happened to many people, so it's not just about my mom, but it's about Alaskans and particularly elders in Alaska. What had happened is that her hearing aids automatically answered a phone call, so she did not look at the number and see who the number was from. And what she heard on the other end of the line was my voice. It was AI interpreted my voice. It really wasn't me, but she didn't know that. And it was indicated that I had been in an accident and that I needed help. And it went on and it got pretty detailed. And I know many of you have heard this story before. And then after my voice was over, they put somebody, quote unquote, known as a lawyer on the phone who told my mom that she needed to get money to me ASAP so that because I had been arrested for this accident. My mom said when she heard my voice on the phone, she lost her mind, and she probably would have done just about anything to help me. So she took the instructions of the lawyer who told her to go to her bank and take cash out of her bank. And then instructed her on how to go to a cryptocurrency kiosk, which I didn't even know existed, and told her exactly where to go and find this kiosk and how to put the money in and how to make this transaction work. So my mom did all of that, maybe the amount of money wasn't a lot for some, but it was a lot for my mom, and any amount of money that's being taken from anybody fraudulently is a lot of money. So that's kind of the backstory of where this bill got started for me that we are hearing today. And I want to first make sure that people understand that I don't have any problem with cryptocurrency. I know that there's modern means of money transmission coming our way, and Alaska needs to keep up with those kinds of things. But I do think that what we are addressing here today is when it's being used fraudulently in the color of crime. So I just wanted to put that on the record. I'm not saying all cryptocurrency is bad. I just think that we as a entity here in the legislature are supposed to be looking out for folks when there is crime that is happening. So it's not, again, about protecting just my mom, but I think everybody in the room is probably knows somebody or maybe even themselves has been a victim of having these kind of phone calls. Maybe many people figure out that that's what's happening, but a lot of people don't. And as a matter of fact, the numbers of this crime happening is really sobering because in Alaska, in 2023, Alaskans age 60 and older reported more than $8.7 million in losses, which was an increase over the year before of $1 million. So this is on the rise. This is not something that is going away. And when we look at all internet-enabled crime in Alaska last year, a total exceeded over $26 million. And seniors seem to suffer the largest share of that because they're more vulnerable. They have more cash available to them. And, you know, like my mom, you know, she lost her mind. She thought it was me. She would do whatever it takes to take care of her daughter. And out of these kind of crimes that are happening, 45% of those losses are from cryptocurrency schemes. So those are kind of sobering numbers as we see this on the rise. The figures come from the FBI Internet Crime Compliance Center and state reports. So that's where I got the figures so that you know. And I think that the number is probably higher because many of our victims never report it. My mom wouldn't have reported it if she didn't know me. As a matter of fact, it took her a very long time for her to tell me how she put the money, what she did with it. Because I told her, why don't you just stop that money in your bank? And she said, I can't do that. And I was like, what happened? She wouldn't tell me. It wasn't until I had a meeting with the AARP in my office that they actually had brought this to my attention because I had told them about it. And that's when I learned. And I called her the next day and said, is this what you did? And she was like, yes. This is what I did. So I think that the incident of our Alaskans losing money is far higher than the $26 million that we have on record. Anyway, so in front of you today, I'm offering SB 249 virtual currency kiosk, which is what I'm going to call it, the Don't Mess with Grandma Bill. If I might. This really addresses a growing gap in our state's financial regulatory framework. It's the unregulated rise of virtual currency kiosks. They are essentially unregulated at this point. While Alaska embraces technology innovation, we must ensure that these new financial tools are not weaponized by bad actors to defraud our citizens, particularly our seniors and our most vulnerable neighbors. So, the bill, what it really does is it puts some sideboards on these kiosks that they don't have. And that might be better explained by having Mr. Hilliard read the sectional, or he can give you an outline of that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. Thank you. Mr. Hilliard.
Again, for the record, Heath Hilliard, staff to Senator Tilton. While I won't sure, the extent of my own personal experience, it should be noted that I had that attempted on me in October of last year. Had I gone through with the transaction that was being requested at the behest of what I believed was Wells Fargo fraud protection, not only would I have lost everything in my savings and checking account, I would have owed Wells Fargo another $8,000 in a revolving line of credit. So it was when I was when I had $20,000 in cash in my hands and they were asking me to put it into a cryptocurrency kiosk that I had a second thought and said, I really need to check this out with the FBI, which made them immediately angry and then they hung up. So I didn't want to spend all the time talking about my experience, but to let you know that it's happening far and wide. So with regard to the sectional, rather than boring you with reading it, you know, verbatim, I'm going to go over, I'm going to summarize it. And there are five kind of broad categories that are encompassed in this bill. One is licensing and operational oversight. Two is consumer protection and refunds. Three, fraud prevention and identity. Four, reporting and law enforcement cooperation. And five, enforcement and local authority. To go through that, licensing and operational oversight, two key, well, there's really three, but operational oversight, mandatory licensing for these kiosks, transaction limits. So this bill presents both a daily transaction limit and a monthly transaction limit. So an individual can't do more than $1,000 per day or $10,000 in a 30-day period, and fee caps, not more than 3% of the total transaction in fees to the operator. Consumer protection and refunds, mandatory refunds for people that are victims of this type of fraud. They have to file a police report within 90 days, and they're supposed to be repaid by the operator within 72 hours of the complaint being filed. Disclosures. This is a component. The disclosure basically will tell a potential victim or a customer using this kiosk, these devices can be used for this type of fraudulent activity. Be warned, and if you have suspicion, contact your bank or law enforcement, etc. There must also be customer support. That's one of the other things. Customer support, there must be live customer service from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day of the week, where customers can contact the kiosk operator and say, I have a questionable circumstance or I did a questionable transaction. So that's one of the components of the consumer protection. Fraud prevention, identity, strict verification using government-issued ID, blockchain analytics, which will prevent will block transactions linked to fraudulent wallets or use of high-risk overseas exchanges. Also, staff training to have kiosk operator staff be aware of some of these fraud schemes and can be able to advise customers using these to avoid those. Reporting and law enforcement cooperation, data disclosure. So they have to do quarterly and annual reports, the operators do, and report circumstances of questionable transactions over the course of that quarter or the annual. Also, they have to provide direct access to government agencies or law enforcement in order to be able to track potential fraudulent transactions. Lastly, penalties. So obviously the operators, presumably operating legally, they're not going to be responsible for any fraudulent activity insofar as they didn't do anything to the customer. They're providing a service. So there's no criminal sanction, but there is a civil penalty. There are civil penalties allowed. Furthermore, it allows localities, municipalities to adopt regulations or ordinances that are stricter than was presented in this bill, so long as it doesn't contradict what the bill says. And that's really the summary of the sectional.
Senator Yount.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, through the chair. I think we're headed in a great direction here. I just got a couple questions clarifying mainly. So did I hear this correctly, that if somebody is, duped or taken advantage of in a fraudulent way, that the operator of the kiosk would be responsible to pay back the person who was stolen from?
Through the chair, Senator Yount, that's what the language says currently as it reads. What this bill is attempting to do is to have operators continue to do best practices and due diligence to protect the customers. And so they assume some degree of liability if they allow a fraudulent transaction to happen on one of their devices.
Okay. Thank you. My concern or follow-up, sir.
Senator,
My concern would be that if they were in on it, right? And so and I don't think that would happen often, but it could happen. And so – you've got somebody in Wasilla, Alaska that goes down and they got a friend in another country and they send money to them and then they come back and say that it was fraudulent. They were in on it. I mean, we see this with sport betting all the time, right? Athletes, unfortunately, betting on themselves to win or lose too, right? This is, the FBI is very involved heavily for a good reason right now with a couple of different professional sports from athletes actually helping throw matches, right? And so you could actually do that pretty easily here, and so that'd be a concern. So things to take into consideration moving forward. Have any other states passed similar legislation to this?
Through the chair, Senator Yount, and in fact, that is the case. The bill before you is actually an amalgamation of numerous different states, Arizona, California, I believe Texas. There is actually a document in your packet that shows the various state legislation throughout the country over like the last 3 to 5 years. So what we did here, just to be clear, nothing in this bill was expressly requested of drafting or prohibited from drafting. We were given essentially an outline of a model bill from the AARP, and we sent that to drafting and said, turn this into a bill that we can introduce. So with regard to moving forward, one of the main operators of kiosks in Alaska has already asked to speak with us later this week, so we intend to talk to them on Thursday. But my point is nothing in here was like by specific design of this office. This is, again, amalgamation of multiple different states.
Senator Yount.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And yeah, the AARP is amazing. They do great work. And so, like I said earlier, we're headed in a great direction. Maybe after you meet with the operator of the kiosk, if you could ask them about my question in regards to what happens if the victim is in on it, right? And then how we mitigate that in the future. So thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any further questions for the bill sponsor or staff? Also online for questions is Director Tracy Reno from the Division of Banking and Securities and Dean Fleer, Financial Examiner from the Division of Banking and Securities. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for bringing this bill forward. I think it's very much needed. But can somebody explain to me how these virtual Bitcoin kiosks, how does it work? Because I'm really not familiar, and there's probably other folks watching who may be in the same boat that I am. Thank you.
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, I honestly have not used one myself, but my mom could tell you how it works. What I believe that you do is that you have to have your cash from that you have. She went and got cash out of her bank account, and then she was given instructions by the person on the phone of exactly to how to go to the kiosk, where the kiosk was even located in. We're finding that mainly they're located in gas stations across Alaska, mostly in Anchorage and a few out in the Matsu. But you put your money into the kiosk, and then you choose. They have different choices of currency that they ask you to choose from one. And in this case, they told my mother exactly what to choose. So then she puts her money in and away it goes. At this point, she has filed all of the documentation. She talked to local law enforcement and to Juneau law enforcement because that's where it started. The only recourse they said was to do documentation with the FBI. She did fill out an FBI online form, but has not heard anything back from them. And of course, security in banking has also reached out. But so as far as I know, it's like using any kind of ATM, although it is not insured like by the FDIC, like a bank ATM would be insured.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was really, really helpful. I think the thing that threw me off was virtual. Yeah, but that was really, really helpful. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. Maybe Ms. Reno or Mr. Fleer can answer them. And maybe we could talk with the troopers and law at some time, too. So my question is, knowing the nature of these things, my concern is that do these crypto kiosks make it really easy for a drug transaction, them paying for drugs, to take place and then have an exchange of actual drugs occur somewhere else, and you have a lot more difficult time kind of proving that a drug transaction took place? Can you help me understand that, someone?
Through the chair, excuse me, this is Tracy Reno, the director of the Division of Banking and Securities. I can't speak specifically to a type of crime. I can tell you that the division has seen an increase in complaints related to cryptocurrency and specifically kiosks. We are aware of a police department in the state that has actually put signs on the machines to warn people because they're in such a panic. As Senator Tilton said, when they walk up to the machine with their cash, they're not paying attention to the warnings that are popping up or the signs that are on the machine. They're just panicked trying to save, you know, their family member, or they've been told they've committed a crime by not going to jury duty, or the government, they owe money to the government. So I can't speak to a specific crime or what's happening with drugs. That might be a question for law enforcement, but I do know of a police department in the state that has tried to mitigate that by putting their own signs on machines to warn people.
Understood. Thank you. My main concern here is that I cannot think of hardly any legitimate reasons why these things should exist. So my question is, why don't we ban them altogether? Like, I'm kind of wondering, should these things exist? Do they have a place, a legitimate place in the marketplace? Is there a need for them? It's kind of what I'm generally thinking about as I hear these stories, and I'm happy to learn more. I'm happy to be disabused of that opinion, like normal. But as I think about what we're talking about here, it's hard for me to imagine a scenario by which there need to be these machines out in the public where cash goes into a machine, into a payee, someone can give money, and they're completely anonymous. Because isn't that the point? Maybe Ms. Reno, you can tell me a little bit about this more, please. The people who have these accounts that money is kind of put into, are there any way to track down who are the owners of these accounts and where the money goes?
Through the chair, Tracy Reno, Director, Division of Banking and Securities. I can tell you our experience with these machines. We regulate money transmission in the state of Alaska. There are approximately 76 kiosks in the state run by about 6 companies that are licensed money transmitters. It is limited in what we can enforce, and as Senator Tilton said, once the money's in the machine, it's pretty much gone. It's difficult to get it back. When we get a complaint in, we request documentation from the company that handled the transaction, and most of the time the machine may or may not be owned by the company. Sometimes it's a machine that's just loading up the software for a money transmitter, so the machine owner may not be the person that's running the transaction. But once the money goes in, the person gets instruction to send it to a specific transaction, to a specific account, and then that money is sent from one wallet. And if it's a crime, right, if it's a scam, that money and that hits that wallet or that account, and it's immediately transferred out, and it kind of bounces around the world until it goes to another wallet. We have software where we can see sometimes where that money ends up. 99.9% of the time, it's not in Alaska. It's gone to another state or another country. So it's very difficult to get that money back. We do reach out to our licensees to ask them how they've investigated it. Have they determined if it was fraud? Did they shut that account down? Were they able to track the wallet? Can I get the money back? So there's an investigation conducted. Did I answer your question?
What I heard you say in answer to my question of can you track who receives the money, the answer sounds like 99% of the time, no.
We can see, through the chair, it's Tracy Reno. Through the chair, we can see where the money went. If we use the software and we're able to get access to the account, where it ends up or who ends up with that money is not always visible. Sometimes we can see, like, it's sitting in a wallet someplace and we're waiting for somebody to do something with it. It could be a cold wallet where that's just kind of off held off in somebody's, you know, desk until they want to do something with it. Sometimes it's an active wallet with a company that, you know, has money sitting there, and we can say, hey, this is fraudulent, can you claw it back? So it's a difficult process.
Understood. Okay. Are there any questions from committee members? Thank you very much, Ms. Reno. Senator Tilton, thank you very much for bringing this bill before the committee. Do you have any closing remarks?
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, I see this as something that where I am typically a free market girl, and I like to let everything just kind of will work itself out in the free markets. But when things are being used in a fraudulent manner and it is causing damages, not just to, not just to the elders, but as you heard from my staff here, and as you pointed out, it could be even other things that are happening there, then I think that's when we as legislators need to look at putting some sideboards and guardrails around these to protect our citizens. So I thank you for hearing this bill today, and I appreciate each one of you for your questions, and we will come back with answers. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Senator Tilton. At this time, we will set Senate Bill 249 aside for further consideration at a future meeting. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Wednesday of this week when we will take up Senate Bill 35, Delivery Network Companies, Senate Bill 205, Peace Officer, Firefighter Disability, and Senate Bill 180, LNG Import Facilities. As there is no further business to come before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee at this time, we are adjourned at 2:19 p.m.